Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. It's the final day of the show. I have two more performances of the play I'm doing down in South Carolina, and then I fly back tomorrow back home. So I'm looking forward to it. It's been a fun show, but I'll be happy to get back home, back to my usual groove.
Yeah, I imagine that's hard living away from your wife.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, we're used to it. It's like sort of the actor lifestyle is to go do shows out of town. That's not uncommon, but it doesn't get easier, but we make it work. You had a pretty exciting week, huh? Your first ever official streamer showdown.
I did, yeah. It was a blast. I was so nervous on two fronts. I was nervous that, one, no one was going to be there to watch me because there were tons of popular streamers in my pod. And two, I just wanted to do well, to play well and draft well. So yeah, it was really cool. I was definitely nervous during the draft. It was Theros draft, so I was trying to refresh my memory. I managed to do a couple before the actual streamer showdown. I drafted a decent amount of Theros, but not a ton. So yeah, I was in a stacked pod with a bunch of really good streamers. Ended up navigating straight into, ended up in green, red, splashing blue. And the one piece of advice everyone gave me was don't be red. So that was a little awkward.
Yeah.
But I think our deck was good. The curve was a little clunky. I played against MTA in round one, which is super fun games against Megan and Maria. And round two, I played Jim Davis. Lost a close game 3 to him, and I accidentally punted and took lethal damage, which was pretty painful. I could have gone to 1 maybe with a chance of stabilizing, but math is hard. And then I played against Gabby in round 3, so that was super cool. Ended up 2-1. We beat MTA and Gabby, and we lost to Jim.
Nice. Congratulations. 2-1. Very respectable.
Yeah. Super fun. Would look forward to doing more in the future.
Nice. So enough of this nonsense about Theros. How are you doing in Rivals these days?
Rivals is going great. So I've got 80 drafts under my belt, 25 trophies for a 157-70 record, 69% win rate. And I was curious because I feel like I've been doing pretty well lately. So over my last 40 drafts, so my second half of my 80 drafts, I have a 75% win rate.
Ooh, baby. Look at you.
I know. How's it going for you?
It is going well. I haven't looked at like how my like last half of my drafts have gone, but so I'm at 136 drafts, 37 trophies, which puts me at 7th place on the leaderboard.
That is insane. I'm working my way up there. I'm only a few trophies away.
Oh, great. Yeah, got to get you on that front page. So I have a 253-132 win-loss record for a 66% win rate. So clawing my way back up to that 2/3 win rate.
I am certain your win rate has to be insane lately because it feels like you trophy every draft or every other draft. You did like, what, 4 in a row on stream this week or something?
Oh, yeah. I did have a 3-0 day on stream. That was super fun. We had a 3-0, 3 trophies in a row, all matches we won on stream. That was really, really cool.
And didn't you trophy the one that you did off stream like later that day?
Yes. Yeah, I get. No, it was like the one after. So it wasn't quite a 12-0 day. But yeah, I'm feeling good about the format. People keep asking, like, what do you feel like you're doing differently, or like, what change have you made? And it hasn't been anything like concrete in terms of like, oh, I started doing thing X and then my win rate went up. I just feel very comfortable in the draft. Like, and I feel very comfortable in the games. Like, when my opponent plays like Island Miscloaked Herald, I know what I'm up against. Like, I know what I sort of need to do or how I need to craft the game multiple turns ahead. You know, like, I feel like I know the matchups, I know the tricks. I feel comfortable.
That's exactly what I would say. Like, that I feel comfortable is the word I would use. I finally feel like I know the very nitty gradations between cards, like around picks 6 through 12, that like really make a difference in the overall quality of your deck. Mm-hmm. And like the in-game decisions and stuff like that as well. Like, I felt very, going to Theros, I felt like so like a fish out of water. And then going, when I went back to my next RIX draft, I was just like, welcome home.
Yeah, breath of fresh air. I mean, I think it's a really good format.
It really is.
All right, so we've got a pretty cool episode lined up for you all today. But before we get into that, we have to shout out our new patrons. So we do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where you as a listener have the opportunity to give back monetarily to the show if you so choose. It will always be free, but this is just a way for you to help us out, and we try and give back something to you as well. So one of the base level is access to our Discord chat, which is just really exploding. I feel like I'm talking about this every week, but the Lords of Limited Discord is awesome. We actually had to separate a bunch of different chat sessions into different logs. So we have like a what's the play section. We have a like help me build my 40 card deck section. There's like a just a general ask a lord section. So we've got these different tiers of like if you want to discuss stuff, because everything is really active. It's really, really wonderful to come home at the end of the day and see like 50 new messages in Discord. It's crazy. You can also get access to our show notes. You can get access to a pre-show recording to get some behind-the-scenes features. And you also get shouted out on the show your first time being a patron. So we want to welcome Ryan, Audrey, Daniel, James, Blake, Nixon, and Michael. Thank you all so much for your support. Can't tell you how much it means to us.
Yeah, it's super cool to be creating something like the podcast and then have people care about what you're doing enough or enjoy what you're doing enough to want to give back to you. It's an insanely awesome feeling. So thank you.
Yeah. All right. So today we want to talk about drafting with a plan. So this actually, I was inspired by a lot of pictures of people's deck lists from our Discord chat, because I feel like a lot of people, like, you know, they listen to our podcast or they read articles or listen to other podcasts, and they get a lot of information to soak in about like pick orders, or this card is better than this card, or this card has gone down, this card has gone up. And so you have these ideas about cards in the abstract or in isolation. But then when cards fit together in a deck, they're often, what you're hoping is for them to be greater than the sum of their parts, right? You're drafting a deck that has synergy, that has a plan, that has uses for cards that maybe another deck won't have as good a use for. So I see a lot of pictures of decks with like maybe a pile of good cards, but then my question is, what is the plan with this deck? How are you winning with this deck? How do you envision this deck playing out? So I wanted to make an episode where we talked about that. So we're going to go through an entire draft of mine a little later in the episode, but before we get into that, I want to talk about a few general thoughts on this idea of drafting with a plan. So why don't you start us off, Ben?
Yeah, so the first thing you need to keep in mind is after you make your first, I don't know, 3 to 4 picks of your draft or something, pick orders are going to start rapidly going out the window. So you have to have a plan in mind when you're drafting cards, and make sure you're not just drafting a pile of good cards. And I think that's especially important in this format, because you can end up with a bunch of maybe Suncrested Pterodons or a bunch of Legion Conquistadors because you know both of those cards are good, but you're not maybe leveraging them to their fullest potential. So in the right deck, even those specific cards that we know are good are maybe going to be an 8 out of 10 as opposed to a 7 out of 10 or something. So you really need to have your whole deck in mind when you're making picks throughout the draft.
For sure. And there are different things you want to consider. So like your creature distribution is going to vary depending on the deck. An aggro deck is going to want a much more consistent curve, whereas a more mid-range or controlling deck, which are the decks we're generally drafting, those are going to be looking to prioritize curving out at 3 CMC or greater for mid to late game control. And then you'll want creatures for defense, like a few 2-drops, but you're more looking at that higher curve to take control of the mid to late game.
Yes, I would just like to make a public service announcement here on the podcast in case we haven't made this clear. This is not a curve format. Like every time I'm streaming, like at least you know, one person in Twitch chat or multiple people in Twitch chat while I'm drafting my deck, say, well, you need to take a 2-drop here for the curve, or you need to take a 3-drop here to fill out your curve. In my opinion, the best decks have the wonkiest looking curves in the format. Like, oftentimes you have 12 3-drops or something, and maybe 2 2-drops, and then, like, not a lot of 4s, or, and then, like, maybe 5 6-drops, or it doesn't really matter what your curve looks like for these late game decks. I mean, you obviously have to make sure you don't get run over by the aggro decks, but more importantly is like the mix of the types of cards that you have and what roles they're filling in your deck than actually having a nice looking curve.
Yeah, I mean, you can always have access to more 2-drops in your sideboard. See our sideboarding episode for more on that. But you don't really need more than like 4 plays before turn 3, in my opinion, in your main deck. Like, yeah, you need a few 2-drops. You need a cheap removal spell, or, you know, some sort of thing to...
A moment of craving.
Maybe. A moment of craving. Great. Yeah, perfect 2-drop. Slash of Talons. But you don't need a ton if you've got a good mid to late game deck.
And I think another reason that your curve ends up looking terrible, like gets clogged in the 3-drop slot, is that Luminous Bonds and Water Knot are two of the premium removal spells in the format. Mm-hmm. And they're not really 3 converted mana cost cards. Like, they function as like a turn 6, turn 7 play. So they're not, you can't really factor those into what your curve looks like. But we're so trained to want, like, you know, 6 2-drops, 5 3-drops, 4 4-drops, you know, like a beautiful looking curve. And I just don't think that's what this format's about.
Right.
In addition to not necessarily the best looking curve in the world, you want to make sure you've got, speaking of Water Knot and Luminous Bonds, a decent number of removal spells. I think anywhere from 3 to 6 is kind of what I'm looking to have in my deck.
Mm-hmm.
Of the catch-all variety, like, you know, probably 3 hard removal spells, like maybe a couple Impales and a Luminous Bonds, or 2 Water Knots and a Hunt the Weak, at a minimum, that style of thing. And the more I can get, the happier I am.
Right. I don't feel bad when I have, like, I've never felt like, oh, I have too much removal. That's not a thing I've experienced in this format.
No.
So you've got creatures, you've got removal spells, and then your final few slots in the deck are going to be dedicated to maybe some card advantage spells, Secrets of the Golden City, a Recover, maybe a combat trick. You got a Moment of Triumph in there, or an Aggressive Urge, which sort of fills both roles. So then some filler cards there. But that's sort of what you're thinking about in terms of, like, what's the components going to be of your 23, 24 spell deck?
So there's a lot of considerations when you actually get into the draft that have to do with various factors like your playable count. Are you, you know, did you start in the same 2-color pair and you're going to be fine on playables? Well, then you can probably afford to take a riskier pick, maybe take a flyer on pivoting into another color. What are your color commitments like? Are you heavy green? Are you heavy red? If you've got a lot of double colored cards in one color, that might mean you can't take a double colored card of another color. What's your curve look like? Have you gotten a couple of those defensive 2-drops already? Or do you need to spend some picks to make sure you end up with at least 1 or 2 defensive 2-drops? What's the game plan of your deck? How are you going to win the game? Do you have a bomb? Are you aggressive? Are you a mid-range deck? What's the plan? Do you maybe have an example you can illustrate for us, Ethan?
Yeah, so, like, I think one that comes to mind is the choice between Deadeye Righauler and Spirewinder, right? On face value, they sort of fill similar roles in terms of they're both 4-drops, they both cost a single blue, but one is much better if you're the beatdown plan, but it's a ground creature. Another is good at stopping opposing flyers and becoming a win condition in the late game. So these are 2 very different roles. So which is better for your current deck? It's not a toss-up. Like, when you have the choice between these 2 cards, you are making a decision about what you think your deck is doing in-game.
Yeah, that's really important and a really cool idea. That just this one pick in a draft, you're making a statement about, well, I want my deck to do X, or I want my deck to beat down.
Or I currently feel like my deck is lacking X, so I'm going to fill that role with either the Righauler or the Spirewinder in this case.
Yeah, for sure.
On Magic Online, I think, so we were saying it's not a curve format. So when I say drafting with your curve in mind, I don't necessarily mean like making sure it looks like the pretty, you know, 2, 3, 4 curve we're used to, but just like keeping in mind like what your plays are looking like or what your creature count is like. These are all super easy things to be able to do on Magic Online right in front of you. Something that I like to do that I would encourage our listeners to do is to be very clear about what is in your main deck during the draft. I so often see people at the end of the draft with like 33 cards in their main deck. And I don't think that's very, I think that is just hurting you as a drafter. It shows me 2 things. It shows me 1, that you now have a lot of work to do at the end of the draft. But 2, it shows me that you haven't been thinking during the draft about what your deck's plan is. that you're just like, I'll figure it out later. And that's hurting you while you're making picks. If you were much clearer on like, these are the 17 cards I know I'm playing. And then I've got, you know, in your sideboard, maybe you make a column of cards that like, these are the like contenders for filling out the curve, but I'm waiting for more like definitely going to make my deck cards. Then that's going to help you when you get to pack three to look at like, okay, well, what my deck really needs is this card, but I have access to it in the sideboard. So maybe I don't need that one. I can take this contract killing or whatever. So really use the fact that you can look at all your picks and manipulate them during the draft to your advantage.
And definitely, if Ethan's watching you, make sure you've got everything in the exact right spot on the curve. No one drops sitting on top of two drops. None of that business.
And please put your lands in the sideboard. Please put your lands in the sideboard.
I generally do what Ethan's talking about here, but I'm a little haphazard with where things are placed sometimes. But I
think that's where they are. I think it's a leak.
Nah. I got it all straight upstairs in my head. Okay, so another important thing to keep in mind when you're drafting is that duplicates of cards can sometimes have diminishing returns. So the first example that comes to mind here for me is Moment of Craving versus Impale. And just recently, I think I'm going to take the first Impale over the first Moment of Craving, but this is super close. But I really value having a way to deal with anything. And I feel less afraid of the aggro decks than I did at the beginning of the format, which is where Moment of Craving really excels. So for those two cards, for example, I think I'm going to pick the first Impale over the first Moment, but I would much rather have one of each before I have two of one. Like I would much rather have an Impale and a Moment of Craving before I've got two Impales. And then I think past that, I would want, you know, maybe like a 4-2 ratio. Like I'd want four Impales and two Moment of Cravings or something if I could have my ideal mixture. But just keeping in mind multiples of good cards, how good is the second copy? How good is the third copy? And in Legion Conquistadors, I think that runs all the way up to six, probably.
Yeah. But I think like that sort of does the reverse. Like once you have the first Legion Conquistador, the second one goes way, way up.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is like different than what we were talking about with the removal spells.
Yes. An inverse relationship.
Yeah. I think color commitments are a consideration as well. Like double colored spells like Water Knot and Exultant Sky Marcher, those are like good plays for three. Water Knot better than Sky Marcher, but only if blue or white, depending on which card we're talking about, is your primary color. So it's, I think, important to note, like if you're more black than blue, Water Knot is maybe not the, yes, it's probably the most powerful card in the pack for you to take, but is it the correct pick for your deck in particular, right? So like pack one, pick one, Water Knot's great. But then down the line, once you realize like, well, how often am I going to have double blue in this deck? Then maybe it's not what you want to take. How often am I going to have double white in my deck? Am I going to really be able to curve out with Exultant Sky Marcher? Or is it going to, am I going to get hung up with this card stuck in my hand because I only have seven white sources in my deck?
Yeah, I think this is the format for the first time since we've been doing the podcast that there's been really good doubled mana cost cards at like 3 mana and 4 mana in a bunch of different colors. Like, I don't remember having thought about that before since we started the podcast. And that's one of the reasons I really value Evolving Wild so highly now, because it just goes in your two colored decks to help you hit your powerful 3 and 4 drops on time. I can't tell you how many times I've lost a game due to not hitting my second black for Ravenous Chupacabra. Ooh. Like, because it's not, you know, like, because you jam that card in your deck, but, like, black wasn't your primary color, so maybe I've only got 7 swamps or something, and it's a real thing.
Yeah, definitely true.
The last thing, piece of advice we've got for you here is to really check in with your draft at the end of each pack. What does your deck look like at the end of pack one? What does it look like at the end of pack two? And this is something, you know, that'll really help you see if you do what Ethan was talking about and you really keep things that aren't definitely in your main deck in the sideboard. Are you solidly in two colors? Do you have options to be like any combination of three colors? Can you afford to move into black if you open a Ravenous Chupacabra or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Do you really need to get your playable count up? Maybe you floundered around in pack one. So what sorts of things do you have to prioritize going into the current pack?
Yeah, I think being an active participant in the draft like that is really going to increase the synergies of your deck because you will be already primed going into pack two to be like, this is what I need to look out for. I need to decide what my second color is and I need removal spells or whatever it is. Like figuring out what your deck is lacking or the direction your deck is going to be good in, I think, is really important.
Amen.
All right, so for better or worse, we are going to look at the entirety of this draft that I did.
Oh, it's gonna be for better. How could you even say that?
Well, I texted you last night. I was like, oh, I'm a little embarrassed. Like, I was looking through your review of some of my picks, and even like a few days out, I was like, yeah, why did I make that pick, you know? So, and that's, I'm feeling not so lordly going through this draft.
Oh, you're feeling a little vulnerable. Okay,
vulnerable, a little sensitive.
I thought you were just like maybe not looking forward to looking at a whole draft, and just wondering who my podcast partner was.
No, please. And especially, this draft is quite spicy, as you will see. So we're probably not going to go through, you know, a ton of picks per pack, because we're trying to go through 45 picks here. But we are going to go through each and every pick and discuss like what our thought process would be around those cards and how we're drafting with a plan here. So you want to kick us off with pack one, pick one?
Yeah. And I think, you know, this will be good practice if you're somebody that drafts on MTGO all the time. Like, trying to keep track of what we've got in audio form is really good practice for an actual draft. You know, this isn't that far off. I think it could be a little daunting maybe to think, oh, I'm listening to a whole draft in a podcast. But this isn't really that far off from what you have to do in a paper draft, right? You have to keep track of your picks as you make them, looking forward to the next pick.
Oh, wait, hold on. What do you mean drafting in paper?
That's a thing people do sometimes.
I don't know. Wait, what do you mean? That doesn't make sense.
You sit down at a table. Are you like joking right now?
Yeah, I'm joking.
Okay. Come on, I lost it. All right.
Got him.
So, wow. All right. You were so serious.
Yeah, that's acting, baby.
All right. You got me good.
Gotcha.
Pack one, pick one. You sit down and you see the following cards. Squire's Devotion, 2 and a white for... I was just reading. I was so shocked by what just transpired. I forgot that Squire's Devotion was my bae. Squire's Devotion, my girl.
You were like, oh, what's this card? Oh, I like this card.
2 and a white for the enchantment. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 on lifelink, and when it enters the battlefield, you make a 1/1 lifelink vampire. Impale, 2 black/black, sorcery, destroy target creature. Reckless Rage, red mana for the instant, deals 2 damage to target creature you control and 4 damage to target creature you don't control. And Rekindling Phoenix, 2 red/red for the 4/3 flying phoenix. Oh, Lord. Whenever Rekindling Phoenix dies, it re-enters the battlefield as like a 0/1 hatchling token, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, you sacrifice that token, return Rekindling Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it has haste. I believe that's the text of that card.
You like basically got it. It's an elemental. When it dies, you create a 0/1. It doesn't like turn into the 0/1. It's still dead. So like if you kill the 0/1, the thing stays dead.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much a no-brainer. I feel like we can... Not only is Rekindling Phoenix the most expensive card in the set by, like, so many country miles, it's like $30 on Magic Online, but it's a bomb. It's like, you know, they need 2 removal spells to kill it or to, like, trade with it in combat and then a removal spell for the 0/1 token. So I just slam that and try and play red.
Yep.
All right, so pack one, pick two, cards in consideration. We've got a Kitesail Corsair, 1 and a blue for the 2/1 human pirate. That when it attacks, it has flying. There's another Impale. There's a Knight of the Stampede. That's the 3 and a green for the 2/4 human knight that makes dino spells cost 2 cheaper. And there's a Jungle Creeper, 1 black/green for the 3/3 elemental that can return from your graveyard to your hand for 3 black/green.
I think this is another fairly straightforward pick here. Worth noting, there's no red cards that are in contention in the pack, so...
Probably the best one is Frilled Deathspitter. That's the 2 and a red, 3/2 with Enrage, deal 2 damage to a player.
Yeah, and that's so much worse than these other cards that you're not even thinking about that here, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
So I think then we're just trying to pick the best of these 4 cards, and I think that's head and shoulders Impale above the rest.
I agree. That is what I took. I think it's like, you know, I often talk about when I open a card like Chupacabra or Tetsamok or even Rekindling Phoenix, like, I really want to try and get that card in my deck. Like, if I open Tetsamok, I am trying to be black. So much so where I will, like, take subpar black cards over other better cards and other colors so that I can like make sure that black is my primary color and like try and cut it or whatever to navigate the draft that way. So I feel that way about Rekindling Phoenix, but I'm not going to take a Death Spitter over an Impale here. That just seems too extreme.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on, pack one, pick three. You see the following options. Knight of the Stampede, 3 and a green for the 2/4 that makes your dinos cost 2 less. A Jungleborn Pioneer, 2 and a green for the 2/2 merfolk that brings a 1/1 merfolk hexproofer along with it. Stormfleet Swashbuckler, 1 and a red for the 2/2 pirate that when you have the city's blessing gets double strike. And Evolving Wilds, the land that can tap, sack, and fetch for any basic land. And Zakama, Primal Calamity. 6 green, white, red for the 9/9 dinosaur that when it enters the battlefield, untap all lands you control. Has 2 in a red activated ability to deal 3 damage to a creature. 2 in a green, destroy target artifact or enchantment. And 2 in a white, gain 3 life. And there also are literally no black cards in the pack, worth noting.
Yeah, for sure. So I've played with Zakama before. You've played with Zakama before. It's a powerhouse, right?
It's a bomb, yes. And something that you can work towards casting.
Right, a bomb with a capital B, and it is possible to cast in this format. The format is slow enough, and there are the tools in the format to be able to cast it. And it's red, so we could still play our Phoenix, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a windmill slam here. I don't even think it's particularly close, because that also means that two people to your right were not interested in trying to do this.
Right.
Which means they're probably not playing dinosaurs.
Yeah, so you can expect to get the tools for this kind of deck or this kind of support for this card from at least two people to your right.
Yeah, so I think once you pick Zakama, there's a huge mental shift that needs to go on in your brain, because that's like a thing that's going to dictate the entire rest of your draft. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, you know, you want to be some sort of a controlling deck, right? Because you've got to hit land drops to get up to 9 mana.
Yes, correct.
Mana fixing becomes a higher priority, right? We have green, white, red in the casting cost, so we need to make sure we pick up fixing. And worth noting also that you do not have to be Naya colors to play Zakama, right? I've played Zakama in a blue-black deck before. Mm-hmm. Removal becomes way higher priority because we want to make it to the late game, so we need to have ways to interact with our opponent's stuff to make sure that we can get to 9 mana and cast our bomb. We also have not necessarily given up on playing Impale yet. Like, as I've said, I've played Zakama in a blue-black deck, but it's possible we won't, especially after seeing no black cards in this pack. That's a fairly large signal. Not maybe large, but something to take note of. Pack 1, pick 3. And then if possible, we'd really like to have red be one of our primary colors so that we can play both Rekindling Phoenix and Zakama.
So that's a lot of information to have in your mind in terms of how you want the draft to go in 3 picks, right? You're talking about a lot of things. You're looking at a lot of decision points with only 3 cards under your belt, which I think is really important. That was exactly my thought process of like, all right, this card is going to dictate the rest of this draft for me.
Yeah, for sure. And also worth noting that we've now seen in pack 1, pick 2, and pack 1 and pick 3, we've seen 2 Knights of the Stampedes that we are really hoping to wheel with Zakama in our pile.
Yes, for sure. All right, so going on to pack 1, pick 4, you see the following cards in contention. Divine Verdict, 3 and a white for the instant destroy target attacking or blocking creature. There's Relentless Raptor, that's red-white for the 3/3 dino with vigilance, and it attacks or blocks each combat if able. There's a Hardy Veteran, 1 and a green for the 2/2 human warrior. As long as it's your turn, it gets +0/+2. And Brazen Freebooter, 3 and a red for the 3/3 human pirate. When it enters the battlefield, it makes a treasure.
Yeah, this is our first, like, tough choice here, I think, that we faced.
Yeah.
There's reasonable options, I think. I think all of Divine Verdict, actually, they're all sort of reasonable. You could make a case for all of them. Hardy Veteran locks up a 2-drop, but it's maybe a little early to be doing that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I'm the least excited, I think, about Hardy Veteran. Relentless Raptor, if we do end up base red-white, is going to be very strong 2-drop. It's good on offense. It's good on defense, too. Like a 3/3 that has to block every turn also holds down the ground very well. Your opponent's probably going to have a removal spell or a combat trick to punch through it. And then Divine Verdict, we have no removal yet other than Impale, which we probably aren't going to play. And Brazen Freebooter ramps us. It makes a treasure, a 3/3 body is respectable. So for me, I think I would narrow it down to Divine Verdict and Freebooter, and I think I would take Divine Verdict to just lock up my first removal spell, even if it's sort of clunky.
Yeah, I think that is probably right. I'm not happy with my pick here. I took Relentless Raptor, and I can't even really defend what my thought process was at the time, because I think it is actively not the kind of card that belongs in this deck. I think, looking at this, so I really want a Brazen Freebooter in this deck, probably, but the 4-drop slot gets so clogged, and Freebooter usually wheels. Like, mm-hmm. You usually can get them pretty late, so I don't feel like I need to take it here. So then that puts it between, I think, Verdict and the Frilled Death Spitter that's in the pack, the 2 and a red 3/2 with Enrage, just as, like, a good early defensive play. But I probably would just land on Divine Verdict reluctantly if I were to do this draft again.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pack 1, pick 5. You see the following options here. Evolving Wilds, the fetch land. Sun-Crested Pterodon, 4 and a white for the 2/5 flying dinosaur with dino vigilance. And Stampeding Horncrest, 4 and a red for the 4/4 dinosaur with dino haste.
Yeah, so this pack, I think, is a lot clearer of a choice between... I would rule out Stampeding Horncrest pretty quickly and put it between Evolving Wilds and Sun-Crested Pterodon. As you said before, we're definitely going to want to look for, like, mana fixing in the pack. But I think Suncrested Pterodon is too important in terms of like doing a lot for this kind of deck. Like, it just brickwalls so many creatures to allow you to have the time to cast Sakama that I think I would take it over Evolving Wilds at this point.
I agree. I think I would be on Suncrested Pterodon here, but it's important. Like, this is a... So both of Evolving Wilds and Suncrested Pterodon are like the best cards in their category in the set, in my opinion. I think Suncrested Pterodon is probably the best defensive card in the set. Mm-hmm. I think Evolving Wilds is the best mana fixer in the set. But I agree with what you said. I think Suncrested Pterodon is more unique in what it offers to the deck. So mm-hmm. I'd be on that here. But next time we're faced with the same choice, I think I might be on Evolving Wilds and take a nod to the mana fixer once I've got my first Suncrested Pterodon locked up.
Right. And so this is exactly what we were talking about before in terms of like diversity of spells or diversity of cards. That once we have the first Suncrested Pterodon, if we're presented with this choice exactly or a similar choice, that we'll want the first mana fixer before the second copy of Suncrested Pterodon. So that's something to keep in mind in terms of like how you're rating these cards. So these pick orders are now so much in flux as we're getting deeper into the draft. Pack 1, pick 6, you see the following cards. There's a Recover, 2 and a black for the sorcery to return target creature from your graveyard to your hand and you draw a card. Sun-Collared Raptor, 1 and a red for the 1/2 dinosaur with trample and like super fire breathing. 2 and a red, it gets +3/+0 until end of turn.
Patent pending.
Super fire breathing. We'll have to workshop that one. Colossal Dreadmaw, 4 green-green for the 6/6 dinosaur with trample and Foul Orchard, that's the black-green dual land.
Yeah, this is a tough choice here. There's not like great options for pack 1, pick 6. Mm-hmm. You know, Recover goes along with our Impale that we've got, but I think that Impale Dream is slowly dying here. Mm-hmm. Sun-Collared Raptor is a 2-drop, not a good defensive 2-drop. So where I really like Sun-Collared Raptor is in like a red-green dinosaur beatdown deck. And I know Ryan likes it in his red-black mid-range deck with some recovers. Mm-hmm. Colossal Dreadmaw is a fine finisher in a deck like this, in an Aya Dinosaurs deck. I really value the first copy pretty highly. And then Foul Orchard here could potentially keep the Impale Dream alive for us in a Zakama-type deck, like if we were still black base somehow, splashing a Zakama. I think I would, that seems unlikely to me though, so I think I would lock up my first copy of Colossal Dreadmaw here.
Yeah, I agree. In retrospect, I would have taken Colossal Dreadmaw here, but this is what I was feeling, is that I still wanted to play Rekindling Phoenix, and so I was hoping to be like, I guess it still doesn't matter, like I could just have been red-green and then have the Suncrested Pterodon as a splash. I took the Foul Orchard here to try and keep the Impale Dream alive, but I think that's just trying to do too many things. Like, I don't need to be trying to play Phoenix, Zakama, and Impale. That's just like, I don't need all that power in one deck. So I think probably just taking Dreadmaw would have been the better option.
Yeah. Pick 7, we see the following options. Traveler's Amulet, 1 mana for the artifact fixer. You can pay a mana and sacrifice it and go get a basic land out of your deck, kind of Evolving Wilds minus. Maybe 2 minuses or 3 minuses. It's considerably worse than Evolving Wilds. Gleaming Barrier, 2 mana for the 0/4 artifact that when it dies, you get a treasure. And Pirate's Pillage, your boy.
Mm-hmm.
3 and a red for the sorcery. Let's see, I don't even know what this card does. When you cast it, you...
It's Tormenting Voice.
You discard a card and then draw 2 cards and then you make 2 treasures, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, I've not cast Pirate's Pillage yet. I'm missing out.
You are missing out. So I think it's Pirate's Pillage here, and I think it's not close because you have Zakama. I think Pirate's Pillage is like at its best in a deck with Zakama because it not only digs you towards that card, but it ramps you towards the card as well.
No, I agree. I think Pirate's Pillage is the pick here, and I think it's going to be very good in your deck. So each of one of these things offers something, fixing and defensive speed. And Gleaming Barrier, I think you can get later in the draft than this. And I think Pirate's Pillage is a better fixer than Traveler's Amulet. I agree.
Yeah. I would play probably 2 Pirate's Pillage in a deck that had a Zakama. So I was happy to grab that here. Pick 8. We've got an Atsakan Seer. That's 1 green-white for the 2/3 human druid that taps for any mana of a mana of any color, and you can sacrifice it to return a dino from your graveyard to your hand. There's a Frilled Death Spitter again, and there's a Cacophodon, the bane of all water knots. 3 and a green for a 2/5 dino with Enrage, untap target permanent.
Yeah, we still don't really know what colors we are yet, and I think Atsakan Seer is like really, really good in a dinosaurs deck. It does everything we want. It fixes our mana, it ramps us towards Zakama, and if one of our big dinosaurs dies, it can buy it back. So I think that despite the fact that we're, you know, like, not sure what colors we are yet, and Cacophodon or Frilled Despiter is a safer pick, I think we want to take a flyer here on Atsakan Seer and take the powerful card and see if we can't be making our mana work to cast it.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I grabbed.
Pack 1, pick 9. Pretty easy choice here between Sun Sentinel and Naturalize. Not a lot in the pack. Sun Sentinel is the 1 and a white for the 2-2 Vigilance, and Naturalize, 1 and a green, destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yeah, I think that, you know, people who would listen to our sideboarding episode would be like, well, you take Naturalize here for sure. But we're bobbing and weaving a lot in this pack, still trying to figure out, like, what colors we're going to be. And so I think when you're in that situation, you want to take the, like, filler 2-drop over the powerful sideboard card.
I agree. Well, and this also, like, makes it so that we don't have to spend a future pick on a 2-drop, maybe, like, a higher pick. So locking one up pick 9 here is just nice to be able to check off that box. Yes, I've got something to block with on turn 2.
Right. Pick 10, a couple dinos came around, and a Hrozka Raptor, that's 2 red-red for the 3-4, and a Hrozka Frillback, 2 and a green for the 4-2. But also Stone Quarry came around, which is the tapped dual land for red and white, which is awesome for a deck trying to cast Sakama.
Yeah, just snap up Stone Quarry here, not close. Really, really nice to see that late. Pack 1, pick 11, there's Stormfleet Swashbuckler again. That's the 2-2 Double Striker that came back around on the wheel. Jungleborn Pioneer also came back around on the wheel. The 2-2 make a 1-1 in green. And Stone Quarry, another red-white dual land.
Yeah, so I think, again, you grab the fixing here, though pretty crazy to see these, like, fine to good 2 and 3 drops in colors we might be. That is just, like, all making me feel good about where we're at in this draft.
Yep, for sure. And then the draft rounds out. Pick 12, you get a Brazen Freebooter. Pick 13, you get an Aggressive Urge, the 1 and a green +1/+1 draw card combat trick. Pack 1, pick 14, you get a Shatter, which is, in fact, in this set. I literally never saw it until we talked about it, and now I see it all the time.
Good.
Imagine that. And then last pick, you grab a Mountain.
Which is a signal that red is open, I think.
Yes, obviously.
Yeah. All right, so what are the things that you're thinking about at the end of Pack 1 going into Pack 2 with what we have so far?
So I just want to kind of take stock of what type of cards we have. So in the bomb win condition department, we've got Zakama and Rekindling Phoenix. Like, we're doing great there. Those are 2 insane powerhouse cards. If we didn't get any more win conditions, we'd probably be all right. You know, we'd like to pick up 1 or 2 more, but feeling very good about that department in our power level.
We should say that we're only going to be discussing the picks that I actually made after we, like, discuss what, like, maybe we should have done for each pick. But for these, like, summaries, we're going to discuss what I actually had in my pile rather than being like, oh, well, we also, if we had taken that Dreadmaw, we would have had another win condition. That just feels like too much to keep in our heads. So we're just going to talk about what I actually took.
Yep. We've got 1 piece of removal in Impale that we're unlikely to play. Black was super cut in our seat, despite the fact that we took that green-black dual land. So I think that dream's probably dying. We have 0 removal in the Naya colors, and this needs to be a priority for us going into Pack 2. Defensive speed, we've got 2-2 drops, the Sun Sentinel and the Relentless Raptor. We're probably okay in that department, especially if we end up base white-red. For ramp and fixing, we're doing great in this department. We've got Atsakan Seer, Pirate's Pillage, the 2 red-white duels, and a black-green duel. Flying defense, we have a Sun-Crested Pterodon. We could use some more of this going into Packs 2 and 3 for sure. And also worth noting, we didn't wheel either Knight of the Stampede from Pack 1, Pick 2, and Pack 1, Pick 3. So there's at least probably one other person trying to do dinosaurs at the table. And the other thought I've got is that since we've got Rekindling Phoenix, we probably want to be base red if we can swing it.
Yeah, for sure. I think I agree with all of that. And the fact that Brazen Freebooter and Pirate's Pillage are also red and provide fixing and ramp for you, I think that's another incentive to be base red. All right, so going on to Pack 2, Pick 1, we see the following cards in contention. There's a Snubhorn Sentry, single white for the 0-3 Dino with Ascend. If you have the City's Blessing, it gets +3/+0. There's a Gleaming Barrier, that's the 2-mana artifact 0-4 Defender. There's another Stampeding Horncrest, a Colossal Dreadmaw. There's a Sea Red, 1 red for the Aura Enchant Creature. Enchanted Creature gets +2/+1 and has First Strike. And at the end of your turn, if you didn't attack with a creature this turn, you sacrifice Sea Red and another Traveler's Amulet.
Yeah, this is not like what we really want to be opening Pack 2, Pick 1.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of options here. I think, you know, you might be inclined to take Sea Red, but I think that card is sort of a trap for the deck we're drafting right now, because we're not planning on winning through, like, aggressive attacking. We're planning on stalling out and winning with our late game bombs. So I think we want to rule out Sea Red despite it being a powerful card. And then of the things that are left, I think I like Colossal Dreadmaw the best, just locking up another finisher here.
Yeah, I agree. I also think we're, like, probably also want to be base green because of Atkins here, or I guess you could also just be base white and splash green, but the Atkins here is also sort of skewing my picks here a little bit, because like it's so good for fixing and you don't want to like splash for it, but then we also want to be base red. Feeling pulled in a lot of different directions, but I also settled on Colossal Dreadmaw here.
All right, moving on to pack two, pick two. You see the following options: Luminous Bonds, two and a white for the pacifism effect, and Itali Primal Storm, four red-red for the 6/6 dinosaur. And when it attacks, you reveal cards off the top of each player's library, and you may cast them without paying their mana cost.
Yeah, I mean, this was just like the test of my greed right here. Right? Like, you've got just like a very good removal spell, which we don't have any of right now, that's like easy to cast because it's single white. Or do we want to take another bomb, basically? Like, we've already got Sakama and Rekindling Phoenix and Dreadmaw now. Do we need another bomb? I don't know.
That's unclear. I would be on Itali here, but I think this pick's super close, and I think it might even be correct to take Luminous Bonds.
Yeah, I think if I were to go back, I would take Luminous Bonds here. Itali is sweet, but again, like, we don't need it. We have finishers. What we need is removal. Like, we got to be... We came into this pack being like, look, we have two bomb rares already that we'd like to play. And that's more than you often get in a draft anyway, right? Like, and now we've got Dreadmaw as well. That's like, you know, it's not like a bomb, but it is a good finisher. I think we probably should have taken the Luminous Bonds. But whatever. We got greedy and we took Itali. All right, going on to pack two, pick three. We see the following cards. Another Snubhorn Sentry. Another Gleaming Barrier. A Knight of the Stampede, finally, and another Cacophodon.
Yeah, I think you're just snapping up Knight of the Stampede here. You are thrilled to see that. It's going to make your Zakama cost two less to cast, and your Colossal Dreadmaw, and your Itali that you've got in your deck. It's just going to be great.
Yeah, I took that as well.
Moving on to pack two, pick four, you see the following options. Sun-Collared Raptor, Raptor Companion, one and a white for the 3/1 dinosaur, and a Charging Tuscadon, three red-red for the 4/4 with trample, and whenever it deals damage to a player, it would deal double that damage instead.
I mean, this is tough. So you've got, like not great two drops, Raptor Companion and Sun-Colored Raptor, and then you've got a really good five drop, but, like, how much top end do we actually need in this deck?
More
top end. I mean, I did take Charging Tuscadon here, but I think you got to probably draw the line in the sand at that card. And be like, I can't take anything that costs five or more now.
Yep, you've got all the finishers you could ever dream of needing.
And you probably, depending on how fixing ends up, you would upgrade. I think I would play Sun-Crested Pterodon over Charging Tuscadon in this deck.
I agree, yes. I think it's a more important card for the deck.
Yeah, I want that defensive flying five toughness more than I want another like thing that can close out the game. I'm not short up on things that are going to close out the game in this deck. Pack 2, pick 5, we see a choice between a Knight of the Stampede, a Hardy Veteran, and an Atsakin Seer.
Yeah, this is a super interesting choice because we still haven't really locked in on what combination of the Naya colors are our base colors. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a pretty defining pick here for the draft. So what it boils down to me immediately to is Knight of the Stampede and Atsakin Seer. Knight of the Stampede offers like really premium ramp towards Dreadmaw, Itali, and Zakama. And Atsakin Seer offers slightly slower ramp, but probably a more intrinsically powerful card than Knight of the Stampede. It comes down a turn earlier. It can buy back a dinosaur, but it's also way harder to cast. And if we're splashing Atsakin Seer, that's like a tough spot to be in.
Yeah.
So I think I would lean towards Knight of the Stampede here. After picking up another Knight of the Stampede and picking up Colossal Dreadmaw, we've got three big dinosaurs that we really want to ramp into. It's a super close pick, though, and I wouldn't fault anybody for going either way, but I think I would be on Knight here over Atsakin Seer.
I grabbed the Atsakin Seer, and I think it is super close. If we didn't have both Stone Quarries, the red-white dual lands already, I would feel much less confident about this pick, but it feels like we're so close to being able to splash this pretty effectively if we are red-green splashing white that I wanted to pick this up here. Or I guess if we were... The awkward thing, it's really only good if we're red-green splashing white, right? That's the only way that the stone quarries end up being pretty good. Like, if we're red-white splashing green, then the quarries don't really help us out that much.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess with that in mind, I'm on Atsakins here, but thinking that we're going to be base red-green at this point.
Yes, that's what I would be thinking too, even if we're picking the Atsakins here, because I really, like, I don't want to give up on Rekindling Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on. Pack two, pick six. We see my boy again, or my girl, rather. Squire's Devotion, 2 and a white for the +1/+1 lifelink enchantment, and an Exultant Sky Marcher, 1 white-white for the 2/3 flying vampire.
This isn't that close for me. I mean, I'm just taking Squire's Devotion. I don't want to take... We're talking so much about how much our, like, mana is so screwed up in this draft. Like, I don't want to take Exultant Sky Marcher here. I just want to take Devotion. It doesn't quite shore up any of the holes that we were talking about our deck had so far, but it does add something which I think is really nice to be able to, like, be behind and then put this on, like, one of our 4/4s or 6/6s and be able to get a huge life swing in our favor. So I think it does help you play from behind against some aggro decks.
Agree.
All right, pack 2, pick 7. Pretty unexciting. There's a Forsaken Sanctuary, the white-black dual land. Are we still trying to keep that Impaled Dream alive? There's a Raptor Companion, 1 and a white for the 3/1, and a Sun Sentinel, 1 and a white for the 2/2 Vigilance.
Yeah, I think the Impaled Dream is dead, and I think of these 2/2 drops between Sun Sentinel and Raptor Companion, I would settle on Raptor Companion because I think it is a better defensive card than Sun Sentinel. Like, it can actually trade up on blocks, So I think I'd be on Raptor Companion here and really looking to prioritize removal.
It also lets you double spell with, like, Knight of the Stampede, which is not irrelevant, so I think I like that. Like, the fact that it has a dinosaur creature makes it a little better than Sun Sentinel at this point for our deck. Whereas, like, I think in the abstract, I would rather have Sun Sentinel.
Oh, that's interesting. I would rather have Raptor Companion as a defensive 2-drop.
I don't know. That one toughness makes me so nervous. All right, moving on. We've got pack 2, pick 8. There's a Famished Paladin. That's 1 and a white for the 3/3. It doesn't untap during your untap step. Whenever you gain life, you untap it. Another Divine Verdict, 3 and a white. Destroy target attacking or blocking creature. And there's an Orozco Frillback for some filler or dinosaur life. 2 and a green for the 4/2.
Yeah, this is another interesting pick. I think ultimately it lands down to Famished Paladin versus Verdict. Famished Paladin's a premium defensive 2-drop. But my question is, I'm not convinced that we're base white here. Mm-hmm. And we know we need removal. And Divine Verdict's like a removal spell. It's not a great one, but it does let you interact with things that are killing you at the cost of holding up 4 mana. So I think for me, I would settle on Divine Verdict here just as a nod to how desperately we need a way to interact with our opponent.
Yeah, I should have taken it here. I think you just got in my head from last week's episode about Divine Verdict being, like, clunky and tough to play around, and I felt like I would get super punished in this deck for, like, trying to pass with 4 mana up because of how hungry our deck is to, like, play these expensive creatures. So I settled on taking Famished Paladin here, which I really don't like in retrospect because it sort of, with, like, Famished Paladin, and I've got, like, a Raptor Companion, and we have a Sun Sentinel, like, all these... Two drops in white are making me feel like I need to be base white, where I don't really have any other reason to be white other than, like, Sun-Crested Pterodon, right?
Right, and the Atsic and Seers.
And the Seers, that's true, and the Seers. But I think I should have taken Divine Verdict here.
Moving on to pack 2, pick 9, you see the following options. Traveler's Amulet versus Gleaming Barrier, so you've got a choice here between fixing and defensive speed.
Yeah, I like Traveler's Amulet much more than Gleaming Barrier. Gleaming Barrier is not a card that I'm really impressed with. It's not the kind of 2-drop I like because it doesn't really interact with the evasive threats, and you don't get your fixing when you want it necessarily. So I really want to grab this Traveler's Amulet here.
I agree. It adds a lot to the deck, especially since we don't have an Evolving Wild yet.
Mm-hmm. Round out this pack with not a ton of interesting picks. Pick 10, picked up a Sun-Collared Raptor over an Aggressive Urge. Pick 11, we had the choice between Gleaming Barrier and Hardy Veteran. You said you'd be on Hardy Veteran here. Why?
Yeah, because I think I'm looking to be more base green-red with the picks that we've got at this point, based on our discussion earlier. But I, given the picks we've made, I think Gleaming Barrier's fine.
Yeah, I liked it as a colorless 2-drop just because I didn't know what my, like, color commitments was going to be. And I felt like I already had, like, a Raptor Companion and I had, like, 2-drops in white.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I took the barrier here. We got a late Everdawn Champion, which, again, I don't think we're going to play if we're double because of the double white, but we could. This is the 1 white-white 2/2 human soldier that has protection from combat damage, as Ben likes to say. Pick 13, we get a Frilled Deathspitter, and pick 14, we get an Overgrown Armasaur, which is the 3 green-green 4/4 dino with Enrage, make a 1/1 sapperling. So getting some, like, filler dinosaurs towards the end here in our Naya colors is still pretty nice.
And we get a forest so that we know green's open.
Exactly. We get a forest last so we know green's open. All right. So really, really tough. We're coming down the home stretch here. We only got one pack left. What do we need coming into pack 3 for Ixalan?
Yeah. So we look through our pile at the end of pack 2. We've got 4 win conditions now. Zakama, Phoenix, Itali, and Dreadmaw. So we picked up Itali and Dreadmaw this pack. We still have stone zero removal in our pile.
I am ashamed. I am ashamed.
So we need to take removal over almost anything now, in my opinion. Defensive speed, we've got Sun Sentinel and Raptor from pack one. We added Everdawn Champion as a 3-drop, Frilled Despiter as a 3-drop, and then a couple 2s in Gleaming Barrier and Raptor Companion and Famished Paladin. In the ramp fixing department, I think we're doing great here. We have 2 Atsakin Seers now. We still have the Pirate's Pillage, the 2 red-white duels, the black-green duel we're probably not using, and we also picked up Traveler's Amulet, so I think our mana is in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
Flying defense, we still just have that Suncrested Pterodon. I think this also needs to be a priority in Pack 3, and we need to try to solidify what colors we are base, because it's still not clear to me, and maybe, and I think you've shed some light on that, in that you're thinking your base red, white? Is that true?
Well, it feels like to take advantage of like Seers plus Stone Quarry, we should be base red, green, splashing white. But I feel like the 2-drops that we have are dictating that we should be base white. I don't know. It's feeling messy right now. I'm feeling a little messy.
So we're going to try to solidify what 2 colors we are base out of our 3-color Naya. But the nice thing is that we've got such good fixing that I do think we could support full-on Naya.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. We really, really could, I think. All right, pack 3, pick 1. You see the following options. You have Treasure Map as your rare, 2 mana for the artifact. You pay 1, tap it, scry 1, and you put a landmark counter on Treasure Map. And then if there are 3 or more landmark counters on it, you remove those counters, and then you flip it and create 3 treasure tokens. And it flips into a land that can tap for a generic mana or tap, sack a treasure, or draw a card. You've also got a Fiery Cannonade, 2 in red for the instant, deal 2 damage to each non-pirate creature. And Ixalan's Binding, 3 in a white for the enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield, and your opponent can't cast spells with the same name as the exiled card.
Yeah, so this is a super close pick, in my opinion. So in a vacuum, I think Treasure Map is the most powerful card here. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's intrinsically more powerful than Ixalan's Binding, and it does a lot of things that our deck wants to do. It offers card selection to help dig us towards our bombs. It offers card advantage once we flip it. It offers ramp to ramp us to Zakama. It offers fixing to help fix us for Zakama. So, like, Treasure Map is literally, like, the perfect card for our deck. Unfortunately, we don't have any removal spells at this point, so I think that bumps Ixalan's Binding like way up, and it's Ixalan's Binding is already a stellar card, and I think the fact that we have no removal here means we've just got to bite the bullet and take Ixalan's Binding over Treasure Map. But I think, you know, if you wanted to be, I think the greedy pick is Treasure Map, and I think the conservative pick is Ixalan's Binding, and I think the fact that we have no removal bumps it towards Ixalan's Binding for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. In defense of my taking Treasure Map, I think my experience with Zakama, and I've had experience with the card a fair bit, is that, like, if you can build your deck around just, like, digging for it, it, like, acts as, like, pseudo-removal, because if you can get it down by turn 7, it's just gonna, like, blow up 2 things and then take over the game.
Yeah, you just win the game when you cast it.
Well, not when you cast it, but when it resolves. But I think, so I think Treasure Map really does that, like, it does all the things you said, right? We, like, get, like, 3 shots at scrying towards it, and then once it flips, it's turning into a land itself and providing 3 treasure tokens. So, I think it is very, very close, and I really, really should have probably taken the removal spell, but I think Treasure Map is really defensible here.
No, I agree. I think it's 100% defensible. I think it's greedy versus conservative is what it is, but I think it's super, super close.
All right, what do we got in pack 3, pick 2?
You see a Lightning Strike and nothing else competing with it, and thank goodness, because we need removal.
Need removal, yeah.
1 in a red, deal 3 damage to target creature or player at instant speed.
Pack 3, pick 3. I think this is a really interesting choice. You see a Shining Aerosaur, 4 in a white for the 3/4 dinosaur with flying, and Territorial Hammerskull, 2 in a white for the 2/3 dino. When it attacks, you tap target creature and opponent controls.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty unintuitive pick here, coming from the land of Ixalan, where Hammerskull was just like head and shoulders better than Shining Aerosaur. But if we look at what our deck is trying to do, we're trying to stall out the ground, play some defensive cards, and then play our bombs and win with our bombs. So Territorial Hammerskull is not like attacking with, you know, like our 2/3/4 drops is not how we're planning on winning the game. So essentially in this deck, Territorial Hammerskull is like a 2 and a white 2/3 blocker, which is not great, like not where you want to be.
No.
And so I think Shining Aerosaur is just like considerably better than Territorial Hammerskull here, and is a pretty clear pick to me, but just feels a little strange coming from Ixalan. So it's an evasive threat. It could be considered a win condition, and it's also going to help shore up our defense against flyers.
For sure.
So Shining Aerosaur is the pick. Moving on, pack 3, pick 4, you see the following options. Deep Root Warrior, 1 and a green for the 2/2. Merfolk, when it becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1. Stormfleet Pyromancer, 4 and a red for the 3-2 pirate. When it enters the battlefield, if you attacked with a creature this turn, you deal 2 damage to target creature or player, and Unclaimed Territory, the land that taps to add a colorless, and when it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type, and you can add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool to cast spells of that creature type.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty clear Unclaimed Territory, and here's why. So I don't often like these, like, colorless fixers, but with our awkward mana base with the Atskin Seers, I think this has the dual option of being able to come into play and name human to cast Atskin Seers or Knight of the Stampede. Or if you've already got the mana to cast your Atskin Seers, then you can use this to name Dinosaur and it'll be able to cast most other stuff in your deck.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Moving on to Pack 3, Pick 5, we see another Unclaimed Territory. We see a Pounce. This is 1 and a green for the instant. For target creature you control, fights target creature you don't control. There's a Commune with Dinosaurs, single green for the sorcery. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a land or dinosaur card from among them. Put that card in your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Slash of Talons, single white. Instant, Slash of Talons deals 2 damage to target attacking or blocking creature. New Horizons, 2 and a green for the enchant land. When it enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on a creature you control. An enchanted land can tap for 2 mana of any color. And there's a Fathom Fleet Firebrand, 1 and a red for the 2/2 human pirate. 1 and a red, smoke breathing, gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Yeah, so this is interesting here. I think we definitely probably want one of the 2 interactive cards in Pounce and Slash of Talons. Mm-hmm. And they both do different things for the deck, right? Slash of Talons is going to provide early defense against threats that are killing you turns 2 and turns 3. And with the large bodies we've got, Pounce can potentially deal with some bigger threats a little later in the game. And I think I'm more worried about losing to bigger threats right now. So I think I'd land on Pounce here over Slash of Talons.
Yeah, I think it looks like at this point I was thinking I was base red-white, just based on like the 2 drops that I had being red-white and like awkwardly splashing for Atskin Seer, which is like never really where you want to be, like splashing for fixing. But it's like fixing and ramp, and also it can like recur a dinosaur, so it felt like it was worth doing that. So with that in mind, I like grabbing Slash of Talons here because I think it's so good against opposing flyers. Like being able to pick off a Kitesail Corsair or, I don't know, the Warkite Marauder, other like little threats that are going to be tough to deal with, a Vampire Revenant, and not being contingent on already having a creature in play like Pounce is. Because like Pounce is really not like, I mean, it's a 2 mana play, but it's like a turn 5 play.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas like Slash gives me that early interaction that I'm lacking, because by the time I get to turn 5, like I can stick my Suncrested Pterodon or I can stick my Colossal Dreadmaw, and then sort of I'm in the driver's seat was what I was thinking about. But I could definitely see grabbing a Pounce here and deciding to be more green red splashing white.
Yeah.
What do we got in pick 6?
Moving on, we've got Wildgrowth Walker, 1 and a green for the 1/3, and whenever a creature enters the battlefield and explores, you get to put a +1/+1 counter on Wildgrowth Walker and gain 3 life. Colossal Dreadmaw, 4 green for the 6/6 Trample Dinosaur. Ravenous Daggertooth, 2 and a green for the 3/2 Dinosaur with an Enraged trigger of you gain 2 life. And Elaborate Fire Cannon, the 2 mana artifact that has 4 tap, deal 2 damage to target creature or player, and then it doesn't untap during its controller's untap step, and at the beginning of your untap step, you have the option to discard a card to untap it, to reuse it. You got to load up that Fire Cannon again with a card from your hand.
So it looks like now is when I'm deciding to take removal, which is kind of weird. But Elaborate Fire Cannon is sort of off-theme. Like, Elaborate Fire Cannon is good in a deck that, like, stops at, like, 5. Like, it's really nice in a vampire deck that, like, needs some reach or something, or has some, like, extra cards, or, like, has no use for extra lands. This deck has use for lands. I can't imagine ever wanting to, like, pitch lands to Elaborate Fire Cannon, you know? I could see bringing it in against opposing flyers, because it's good at picking off, like, cheap evasive threats. But other than that, it feels like I probably should have taken, like, Dreadmaw or Ravenous Daggertooth here.
Yeah, it looks like to me that you're thinking you're red-white and maybe not going to play Colossal Dreadmaw in the deck. And then in that case, Elaborate Fire Cannon makes a ton of sense to me. So it just is making sure you've got a good picture of what you want the deck to look like.
Yeah, I think I should have taken Daggertooth here. Like, we don't need Dreadmaw, even if we're green. Like, we've already got, right, we've got 3 fives. We've got Shining Arisar, Suncrested Pterodon, and Charging Tuscadon. We've got an Atali and a Colossal Dreadmaw, and we've got Zakama. Like, we've got our top end. I don't think I need another 6-drop.
Yeah, Makes sense.
Pack 3, pick 7. You see a Crushing Canopy, 2 and a green for the instant. Choose 1, destroy target creature with flying or destroy target enchantment. Rummaging Goblin, 2 and a red for the 1-1 Goblin Rogue. Tap, discard a card, draw a card. Khinjali's Collar, single white for the 0-3 Human Cleric that makes your dinos cost 1 less to cast. And another Fathom Fleet Firebrand.
Yeah, super interesting pick here. I think the deck could reasonably play any and all of these cards. Mm-hmm. So Crushing Canopy provides flying defense, albeit probably on the splash. And Rummaging Goblin's digging us towards Zakama actively, which is something we want to do. Khinjali's Collar providing ramp for us and some defensive speed. And Firebrand is just like a perfectly serviceable 2-drop that's going to trade off and or trade up in the late game. I think I would settle on Crushing Canopy here because I'm a little worried about shoring up our Flyers matchup, and I believe we currently don't have any outs to enchantments, and there are a lot of good ones running around, but would be happy with any and all of these cards, I think.
Yo, you've got outs to enchantments, baby. It's a combo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think I agree with you with Crushing Canopy. I'm just like, looking back on this draft is making me just realize, like, I just didn't take removal, and I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. I was really just like, I know what this deck's game plan is, and its game plan is to resolve our 9-drop, and the way that we do that is to ramp and dig for it. And so Rummaging Goblin felt like the pick that lined up with that plan the best, but Crushing Canopy lets us not die to flyers and lets us get around enchantment removal or good enchantments, just period. So I think I probably should have just grabbed the Crushing Canopy here.
Yeah. So, and I think the counterpoint to that is, you know, our whole episode here is about drafting with a plan. Mm-hmm. Your opponents, if they're good players, are also going to be drafting with a plan, and their deck's going to have a plan. And I think you need to make sure that you can stop the opposing plan. And if you run up against someone whose plan is flyers, Crushing Canopy is going to be a welcome addition.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah.
So pack 3, pick 8, you see the following options. Sleek Schooner, 3 mana for the vehicle, the boat. It's 4/3, and you have a crew cost of 1. Suncrown Hunters, 4 red for the 5/4 dinosaur with the enrage trigger of deal 3 damage to the opponent. And Commune with Dinosaurs, green mana for the sorcery that lets you look at the top 5 cards of your library and put a dinosaur or a land card into your hand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I can't tell you why I took Sleek Schooner here. I have no reason. There's like no way that I would probably want to run that in the deck. So it feels like I should have taken Commune or Suncrowned Hunters here, and we don't need another 6-drop, so I probably should have just taken Commune. But I guess I just thought I was base red-white at this point, and I was just deciding that that was the case.
Right, Commune is not a good splash, for sure.
Yeah, but if we were red-green splashing the Atskin Seers, which probably is what we should have done, and then just been okay with not having the weirdness of not many 2-drops, I think Commune with Dinosaurs is the pick here.
Moving on. What do we got? Pack 3, pick 9.
Another Crushing Canopy, another Fathom Fleet Firebrand, a New Horizons, and a Ravenous Daggertooth.
Yeah, there's a lot of good options here again. Crushing Canopy could be a great sideboard card. Fathom Fleet Firebrand's a fine 2-drop. New Horizons is great ramp and fixing, especially since we're, you know, we keep talking about our mana, but it's a little demanding, I think the word would be.
Yeah.
And then Ravenous Daggertooth, also, you know, a fine 3-drop filler card. It's going to keep you alive, gain you a little life. I think the clear pick is New Horizons, and maybe we're going to be green, maybe not. But if we are, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I grabbed New Horizons here, but I think probably still should have just grabbed Crushing Canopy. Like, our fixing and ramp is fine at this point, right? We've got an amulet, we've got the unclaimed territory, we've got 2 red-white duels, we've got 2 Atsakin's Ears. I think we're just going to be awkwardly, like, pretty flat Naya, but I think our mana's going to be fine, and I should have grabbed the removal spell here, but I took the New Horizons.
Yeah, how does the draft round out?
Grabbed a Demolish for the sideboard. That's the 3 and a red, blow up an artifact or a land. Some nonsense cards, River Herald's Boon, Ritual of Rejuvenation. We wheeled another New Horizons, like pick 13, and then rounded out with an Encampment Keeper and a Plains, which just let us know that Naya was open. So we got a Mountain, Forest, and Plains at the end of each pack.
Beautiful. I love it.
So what's the recap of this draft? Like, what does this deck look like?
Yeah, we've got our win conditions in Itali, Zakama, Dreadmaw, and Phoenix. Although we didn't end up playing the Dreadmaw, we ran the 4/4 Dino Trample guy. What's his name?
Charging Tuscadon.
Yeah, thank you. We ran that instead of the Dreadmaw. So we still had four win conditions, and we could count Pterodon and Aerosaur in this category as well. Like, they do double duty. They provide flying defense and their flying win conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Our removal looks like Lightning Strike, Slash of Talons, and Elaborate Fire Cannon. So I think our deck might struggle against maybe opposing bombs or opposing large creatures, especially if they're flying.
Yeah. Our deck just folds to an air elemental.
definitely a tough card, except unless you've got Sun-Crested Pterodon. But so we got some defensive speed, same as last pack. We didn't really change there. We still got that same assortment of two and three drops at the bottom of our curve. Ramp and fixing, we're in wonderful shape there. We've got the double Atskins here, the Pirate's Pillage, the red-white duels, etc., etc. We added Treasure Map, Unclaimed Territory, and double New Horizons, which we didn't end up playing the New Horizons, but Treasure Map and Unclaimed Territory, like our deck should have no mana problems, I don't think, despite being three colors. Flying defense, we've got Sun-Crested Pterodon and Shining Aerosaur. So a little light there. It would have been nice to have some Crushing Canopies, but I think we're probably going to be okay against Flyers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you made the point, we've also got Lightning Strike and Slash of Talons, which do very well against the cheap evasive Flyers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, we are soft to Flyers, but not super soft. Like, we have the cheap interactive spells, we've got the two good 5-drop white flying dinos, and then, obviously, once we land as a combo, we're gonna do work.
And then, question I had, because I was just reviewing this draft log, mm-hmm. for Ethan, was, like, what base colors we are. Because it felt like there was this tension. I kind of wanted to, like, late into pack two and into pack three, push into base red-green. And I think you were thinking base red-white, which led to some of the differences in opinion of our picks. But it seems like we solidified into base red-white for the actual deck. And we've got a picture of the deck list in the show notes, and we'll link that just in the regular description of the podcast as well. And I think the deck looks great to me. We did draft with a plan, and it just looks like we're maybe a little soft to Flyers and or opposing Bombs.
Yeah, I mean, the deck worked out great. It did 3-0-6-0, like, didn't drop a game. But I don't want to be results-oriented. I think the deck could have been better if we had picked up some good removal in the, like, Ixalan's Binding or the Divine Verdicts. But that would have made the curve a little more awkward. And I do think, like, I don't have access to the sideboard, so I would have been curious to see, though I guess we have the whole draft log, so we have that. But if we hadn't been base white, we really didn't have a lot of plays before turn three. Like, we had a Gleaming Barrier and a Lightning Strike, and that was about it. And we, like, had the opportunity, I think, to grab a Hardy Veteran, maybe?
A Hardy Veteran and some two drops here in pack three. I think there's some red two drops you could have grabbed here in pick three.
Like, could have grabbed a Firebrand at some point.
Yeah, I do think there's a world where you could have gone red-green.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And that might have been a better, more consistent deck. Like, red-green splashing the Seers and the Flyers, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might have been better. We did end up... The green we ended up running was two Seers, a New Horizons, and a Knight of the Stampede. Classic splashing for fixing.
Well, but you do have, like, the other good fixing to support the splashing of those mm-hmm. fixing cards. And Atticus here does so much more than fix.
Right, yeah. It's not embarrassing later in the game. Like, you don't need it on turn three.
Right.
That's how that draft worked out. So definitely really informative for me going back and being like, I really should have valued a few of these cards a little differently. And I think I got stuck in thinking I was red-white too early. I think I was a little less flexible in terms of, like, well, I still could be base red-green. I think I just sort of let the two drops dictate what my base colors had to be, which I didn't need to do.
Super interesting. All right. I think that's a good place to wrap us up here.
For sure. Thank you all for going through that with us.
So Treasure Hunt still going on for Rivals of Ixalan. In fact, I just saw Strix Familiar post something on Twitter. He got !! Lunch unlocked. So those are still going on. And reminder, if you get entered, if you get five of those completed, you get entered into a giveaway for a draft set of RIX. So the three packs and the two tickets. And we'll be giving away four of those draft sets. And we've already got that 15-hour stream unlocked, thanks to the hard work of Generation D20 and everyone in the Lords of Limited community.
Yeah, super, super awesome to see that. If you want to get those screenshots out to us or just send us some nice little messages, you can find us in a variety of places. I am at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. And we are both under those same usernames on Twitter, at LordTupperware for me, at MrMetronome for Ben, and at Lords of Limited for the podcast.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, you can shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. See you later. We'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.